Good morning to everybody. Boker Tov. Welcome. As I mentioned last week, I'd like to give four shiurim last week, this week, and then two more weeks running up to Rosh Hashanah on issues that relate to kashrut, of which there are many. Last week we looked at the whiskey shiur. Somebody said to me, they didn't come because they're not interested in whiskey. That's fair enough. Maybe they were too tempted. Find out what the answers are. But we had the whiskey shiur. Today I'd like to look at a different topic we'll come to in just a minute. Just let me give you a trailer going forward to the highlights of next week and the week after. Next week I would like to look in the approach to Rosh Hashanah at the fascinating kashrut issue of the kashrut of honey. What is it with honey? Why is honey kosher? And some fascinating applications of that as to how that works, something that's not often talked about, but let's do that. And then in the week before Rosh Hashanah, of course Rosh Hashanah is not just Rosh Hashanah for the years, it's also Rosh Hashanah for agricultural purposes, for trumot and masrot, and I'd like to dedicate one share at the end before Rosh Hashanah to looking at modern halachic, hashgafic, contemporary issues dealing with trumot and masrot, and what's going on with that. An issue, again, that I think a lot of people sideline a little bit. They kind of know it's out there. They don't really understand it or understand how it works. But please God, we'll understand a lot more afterwards. But today I'd like to put together both some of the things we did last week when we talked about the sherry cask whiskey and some of the issues we discussed 2-3 weeks ago when we talked about genetic engineering. And I'd like to talk about the issue of synthetic meat. What is synthetic meat? Let's start with a piece from the BBC, in case you think I've been a bit biased towards the Times, the New York Times. Here's a piece by the BBC. The BBC led the following story in 2013, which is already a few years ago. Look at number one. The world's first lab-grown burger is to be unveiled and eaten at a news conference in London on Monday. Scientists took cells from a cow and, at an institution in the Netherlands, turned them into strips of muscle, which they combined to make a patty. Researchers say the technology could be a sustainable way of meeting what they say is a growing demand for meat. BBC News has been granted exclusive access to the laboratory where the meat was grown in a project costing $350,000. That's a very expensive burger. That was a burger that cost $350,000. But the price of this technology, as all technology, has been coming down, and we'll see that this is becoming more mainstream. He starts with stem cells extracted from cow muscle tissue. In the lab, these are cultured with nutrients. We'll talk in a little bit about what those nutrients might be and whether that's halakhically problematic. And growth-promoting chemicals to help them develop and multiply. 3 weeks later, there are more than 1 million stem cells, which are put into smaller dishes where they can coalesce into small strips of muscle, about a centimeter long and a few millimeters thick. These strips are collected into small pellets, which are frozen. When there are enough, and by the way, it takes 20,000 of these little strips to make one burger, they are defrosted and compacted into a patty just before being cooked. The scientists have tried to make the meat, which is initially white in color, as authentic as possible. So they put coloring in it and make it look like a gesunte beef burger. An independent study has found the lab-grown beef uses 45% less energy than the average global representative figure for farming cattle. It produces 96% fewer greenhouse gas emissions and requires 99% less land. So you can see why people are very excited about this prospect. A lot of meat is eaten in the world today. The biggest annual sacrifice of meat every year is before the Super Bowl in America, where millions upon millions of chickens and cows are slaughtered to feed the eating habits of people sitting down for their Super Bowl party every year. And if we could replace this somehow with synthetic meat, which is grown from real meat cells. So we're not talking about vegetables, we're not talking about tofu, we're not talking about anything like that. We're talking about meat grown from meat cells, stem cells. If we can do that, this will alleviate some concerns. First of all, people are excited at the ethical issues of cruelty to animals. Animals are often raised in atrocious conditions. We talked about that about a year ago when we looked at pets and other issues. This could be a major step forward in alleviating that suffering. Also, we saw just now the environmental footprint, which is very important these days for people, at 99% less now, 96% less emissions, etc. This is much smaller for synthetic meat. Maybe health concerns. Who knows what goes into our meat today? Lots of hormones, lots of chemicals, growth hormones. Maybe this meat is safer, maybe it's not. That's not something we can really express an opinion on. It's genetically modified food. Well, your opinion on GM crops and GM food, is it safe, is it not safe? That's a separate issue, but these are issues that are making people quite excited. From a hashkafic and halachic perspective, we have, however, some other considerations. First of all, the major hashkafic issue here is, are we into eating meat or are we not into eating meat? Again, the way that animals are treated in abattoirs and the way that they're grown and farmed is not acceptable from a hashkafic perspective. We kind of turn a blind eye, most people, some people don't, some people are very principled. My son-in-law, a year on, is still as stark a vegetarian as he ever was. We thought he might crack over the year, but he hasn't. And although he's very nice about it, he's still into eating his tofu every Shabbos. Some people are very concerned, and hashkafically we should be concerned. Maybe this is a way forward. There's no cruelty to a stem cell. There's no such thing, and therefore maybe this is a big step forward. Also, we talked a year ago about Rav Kook's ultimate vision that the world would become vegetarian. They wouldn't eat animals. Now, is this vegetarian or is this not vegetarian? We'll see that in a minute. Maybe this is a step forward to that. However, the halachic issues here are more interesting. And there are five issues that I want to raise and talk about today. Number one, this stem cell. Now, what is a stem cell? A stem cell is a cell in early stage, if you like, division, which can proliferate into a number of different kinds of cells. Now, they don't really take a stem cell, because a stem cell, an embryonic stem cell, or even an adult stem cell, could potentially turn into any number of different kinds of cells. And here, you don't want that. You don't want to grow your burger and find it's all turned into bone cells or nerve cells. That won't be a decent burger. You want it to turn into muscle cells. And therefore, they take a cell that's already become muscle-focused, and they turn on the relevant genes, etc., so that it makes more and more muscles. If this cell is taken from a non-kosher animal, will the burger be not kosher, or will it be yes kosher? Now, you might think, well, of course it's not kosher. It's taken from a non-kosher animal. Not so straightforward. It might be that we could take the cell from a nevela, which is an animal which has not been slaughtered or a trafer, which was ill, or maybe even from a horse or a pig, and grow it into a burger. Would it or would it not be kosher? That's question number one. Question number two, if we take it from a kosher animal, a shechted animal, all totally kosher for yosher, we take it from a shechted animal, is it meaty? When we grow this burger, is it fleishik or is it para? Could we actually have a proper cheeseburger by eating this burger with a slab of cheese? Is it fleishik or is it not fleishik? Thirdly, if you take the cell from a live animal, which, let's face it, the animal really doesn't mind. You're only taking a few cells. It doesn't care at all and it's not painful. But is that called eva min hachai? You are not allowed to take meat from a live animal and eat it. We look at that. Now, this is meat. It's just a very, 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 very small piece of meat, but it is a piece of meat.
Is there a shear?
Yes.
For example, you're taking one stem cell.
Good. We'll see that solved later. Kazayis, less kazayis. So that's the third question. Yes. We'll talk about that in a minute. And gelatin, we'll talk about that too. The fourth question I want to ask is, if we decide that the burger is kosher and that it is para, is there still a Maris Ayin issue putting it with cheese or with milk? Because, come on, it looks like meat, it tastes like meat. I imagine it'll eventually taste exactly like meat. Is there a Maris Ayin issue there? And the fifth issue is, what are they growing this stuff with? What are these ingredients, nutrients, what are they putting in there? There may be a few surprises along the way. So let's have a look at this, turn over the page, and let's start with what I think are some very interesting sources that people may or may not have seen before. What is meat? When is meat meat, and when is meat not yet meat? So, generally speaking, kosher meat, there are three criteria. It has to come from a kosher animal, obviously a cow, not a pig or a horse. It has to come from an animal which is healthy, not a trafer, which we find has got a disease Obviously, we check the animal, we check the lungs, we check other organs. It has to be from a healthy animal. And it has to be from a healthy kosher animal which was properly shechted, so that it's not an availer. If you tick all those three boxes, it's kosher, and it's healthy, and it's been shechted properly, then the meat is kosher. Obviously, the meat has to be kashered with the draining the blood and all that, and salted, etc. That's a definite, but the meat is in principle kosher. What if you get meat that doesn't necessarily satisfy these criteria? Let's have a look at source number two, an unusual beginning source. Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta have a ka'azel ba'orcha. So far it states that starts very innocently. Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafta was walking down the road. He was one of the Tanaim. Pag ubo hanach arivasa. He was suddenly met by a group of lions walking. There were lions in big cats. I don't know if they were lions, like an African lion, but they were big cats roaming the streets or the forests of Israel back in the day. To have a kunam elape, and they started roaring in his face. Oivei, it's the beginning of the end. So what did he do? Amar, he started saying to Tehillim, what would you do? He starts saying to Tehillim, but he picks his Tehillim. He doesn't just say Shir HaMaalos. He says, Hakfirim Shayagim Letaref. He quotes from Barchi Nafshi, the nice posik about the lions are roaring for their meat, for their prey. He hopes this will help him. You know the joke about the guy who gets attacked by a lion and he thinks that he's finished, and then he notices that the lion is speaking before it attacks him. And he thinks it's a miracle. It's a lion, it's a miraculous lion. Let's hear what it's saying. And he listens to it and he hears the lion saying, Shakol Nihyeh. So he's faced with these roaring lions, and he says to Tehillim, what happens to him? Nechitu lo tarti itmata. Two pieces of meat fall down from the sky. It's a miracle. And the lions eat the meat, and they're happy. Except they don't eat all of it. Chada achlua, one piece of meat the lions ate, and they were happy, and they went off. They weren't very hungry. But chada shafkua, and one piece of meat they left behind, and now he has a piece of meat. And he goes to town, and he asks a question. I say, he took the meat. Va'atele be midrash, and he went to the base of medrash. Boyala, and he asked a question, he asked a shayla. Davar tamehu, zeh, or davar tahor? Is this meat kosher? I mean, it's a nice piece of meat, I'll have it for dinner. Is it kosher or is it not kosher? It fell from the sky. Amrule, they said to him, ein davar tamehu, you're emin ha-shamayim. Nothing trade falls from shamayim. Eat it, gazunta hate. No problem, the meat is kosher. Interesting. This is meat which is apparently kosher meat. But did it satisfy these three criteria? Did it come from a kosher animal? Was it shechted? Well, it's not clear. Meaning we don't know if this is mamash miraculous meat that was made in Shamayim, or if somehow a wind blew up from a butcher shop down the road and blew up a piece of meat and it fell at his knees. But either way, this meat apparently is not just edible, but it's also kosher. Is that source relevant for us? Probably not, because we're not dealing with miraculous meat, but maybe yes. Look at the second source, source number three there. Just a few dafim later in Sanhedrin, the Gemara says as follows. The Rav Chanina bar Oshaya, remember we had a source when we talked about cloning about various Amoraim that created a golem? And so here, this is the next part of that Gemara. Rav Chanina and Rav Oshaya, what did they do? Kol Mali Shabbos, every Erev Shabbos, every Friday afternoon, what do you do on a Friday afternoon? Hava'atki behilchas Yetzira, they involve themselves in the Kabbalistic study of Sefer Yetzira, which is one of the Kabbalistic Svarim attributed to Avraham Avinu. They learned this Sefer. Umibrulahu, and they created, Kabbalistically, Iglatilsa, a beautiful choice young calf, Da'achile, and they had it for Shabbos dinner. They never short of a good piece of flesh for Shabbos. They used to create one every Arab Shabbos from Sefer Yetzirah. Now, what is the status of that meat? How did they do that? I don't know how to do that. You don't know how to do that. They knew how to do that. This is meat which is created from Sefer Yetzirah, and it's kosher apparently, but it doesn't tick those boxes. Now, you're going to say, well, come on, Rabbi, this is a very obscure Kabbalistic source. Not so quick. This source makes it into the Shulchan Aruch. Have a look in number four. In the Pitchei Tshuva, on the Shulchan Aruch, which is a very mainstream halachic source, he quotes the Shlah. Now the Shlah talks about this meat that they used to create and says not only is this meat kosher, but it also doesn't need shechting. They could just eat it off the cow. It doesn't need shechita at all. So he quotes the Shlah, Dav Shin Gimel, the source number four. Kasav, the behema shenivreis al yidei sefi yitzira. If you manage to create an animal through the sefi yitzira, kamay de matina b'gemara, like we see in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the bara igla tilsa b'kol erev Shabbos, mutala achloi ba'odenu chai. You're allowed to eat it while it's still alive. It's not eivim in a chai. It's not a problem. It's not regular meat, but it's kosher. V'zehayamata hashvatim, and now he connects it with a midrash. This is what the Shvatim were doing, Reuben, Shimon, etc. Shehevi Yosef, Dibasam Ra, when Yosef spoke Lashon Hara. Remember, there's a midrash that says, what was the Lashon Hara? He said that the boys are eating Avim and Achai. What were they eating? Alavihem She'achlu Avim and Achai. They were eating an animal created by Sefer Yetzirah, which if it's created by Avram Avinu, Sefer Yetzirah, written by Avram Avinu, their grandfather wrote the book. I'm not getting into the historic, realities of Sefer Yetzirah and how that works now. Ki Yosef Sava Shehaya Shehi Behema Gemurah, right? Yosef thought it was a regular behema. V'niru mikol makom asala achla b'lo shchita. But if you do, la halacha, he says, paskins halacha, if you do manage to create a cow using Sefer Yetzirah, even though technically you don't have to shecht it, you should. Why? Midrabbanan on a rabbinic level, mishum maris ayin. Now, you're beginning to see why these sources are important for us. It's not just I'm not just going off on a random excursus around Sefer Yetzirah. Even if technically it might not be in need of Shechita, you have to shecht, because otherwise look what happens. Yosef, the brothers, the Lashon Hara, etc., etc. So maybe this will be true of us as well. Is this meat from Sefer Yetzirah fleishik, or is it not fleishik? Have a look in the Malbim, in number 5, the Malbim on Chumash. Shelaka chema v'chala uben bakar asher asa. Who is this talking about? Who took butter and a cow and a calf and served it up? Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu served it to the Malachim. And of course, everybody's in a tumult. Avraham Avinu serving butter with calf meat is serving milk and fleishik. Now there are a million and one ways to answer that question in the Parshanut. It's before Har Sinai, etc., etc. Did they keep the Torah? Did they not keep the Torah? But the Malbim has an interesting suggestion. Rasa Lomar, how could he serve meat and milk? Ya'an she'asu ayidei sefer yetzirah? Because he made this meat, like we saw later in his grandchildren's time, through sefer yetzirah. Hayuchalim la'achlo in chalav. And he could eat it with meat, with milk. It's not even fleishik. Not only does it not need shechita, but it's not even fleishik. It's power of this meat. Aval b'pashut lokasha. On a more pshat level, it's actually not a problem. Ki natan lifnehem t'chila chema. First he gave them the milk. V'chalav, the butter of the milk, v'achla, and they ate it, v'achakasha, asa ben abakar, and then he served them the meat, but not from the same of asa, which you could do today. You could have a first course which was milchik, and then later serve the flesh, etc., etc. So, again, interestingly, the Malbim says that this magical meat, which is meat but not meat, is parav. Not only does it not need shechita, but it's also parav. Again, is that, why am I bringing sources from Chumash? This is a halacha discussion. The answer is because this is also quoted. Look in number 6, the Cheshek Shloma, who was the Dayan of Vilna. Very important halachic source. He says as follows, V'da, you should know, he says, the basa behema shenivra al yidei sefer yetzirah, mutzah levashel b'chalav, you're allowed to eat it, cook it with milk. De'ein lo din basar klal, it's not basar at all. The Kekas of Agon Amiti, Moreno Harava Malbim, he quotes the Malbim on this as well. Now, leaving aside the broader question of whether you can use Midrash to answer halakhic issues, we need to really have a proper shir on that. It's a fascinating story, question. When do we use Midrashim to impact on the halakhic process? Usually not, but sometimes yes. Here it seems that we are doing, and he says that this meat in principle is parav, it is not even fleishik. How does that impact on the meat that we're creating synthetically? So probably not. It's probably not relevant to us, but it might be in the sense that we see here two examples of meat which looks like meat and it tastes like meat, and you think it's meat and people may even look at it and assume it's meat, which is a problem, but it's not really meat. It's not, it doesn't need shechting, it's not even fleishik, etc. Rav Shechter, bringing it right back up to date, Rav Hershel Shechter from YU, is quoted in an interesting article in number 7, and he says as follows, V'sicha im Rav Tzvi Shechter Shlita, v'chaf beit ada tafshin ayin bet. And he quotes when it was, this article, this fellow Chanach Khan, Rabbi Chan Dr. Chanach Khan, who wrote this article in Tchumim, you'll see later, not Tchumim, in Amaryan. He quotes Rav Shechter from 2012. Hivhir HaRav Shechter, he clarified, Sheledat, according to him, basar hu rak davar shemekuro, the Baal Chaim shenolad mi'ein b'deres hateva. Meat is only meat, halachically, if it comes from an animal which was born from a mother in a natural way. Okay? Kol basa shemiyutzar b'derech acharet, any meat which is created in a different way, einot basar l'inyaniim hilchatiim. It's just not meat. If you can create meat in a different way, it has to come from a regular animal which is born from a mother. Now, we'll have to look. Does our meat, when it comes to this, these burgers that we're going to be creating, and by the way, it might have cost £250,000 for the first burger, but there are now startups, including a startup in Israel, which are working on this technology to actually make this a real affordable food. There's a company called Supermeat. Great name. I can't believe there's no other company they were before called Supermeat. Supermeat, you can Google it and look it up, and they've got a very nice website where they discuss what they're trying to do. They say it's not yet on the market, but they're raising money, etc. So someone obviously thinks that this is a future viable concern. And again, we have to ask, does this meat satisfy these criteria that Rav Shechter put out, or is it some kind of magical mystery meat, in which case maybe it doesn't even need maybe it's power and it's not pleasure at all. Let's go and look into that question now. I'd like to look now at three or four halachic issues in Kashrus that will answer these questions one by one. Go to page 3, please. What is a synthetic burger? Is it really a burger or is it something else? So I want to introduce the concept of panim chadashot. Now, panim chadashot, you'll all be familiar with, from Sheva Brochot. Okay, so why am I talking about Sheva Brochot? The answer is, nothing to do with Sheva Brochot. Panim Chadasha is not only used for Sheva Brochot, which is a new face that wasn't at the wedding, but it's also a concept in Halakha. Look in number 8 as well, at the top of the page. Now, a little bit of an introduction. If somebody is a gazlan and they steal, so the mitzvah is the heishiv et hagazela. They have to give back the very thing that they stole. That's the mitzvah, to give that back. What if they convert it into something else? They change it, they remake it, they grind it down, they make it into something else. So at a certain point, the gazlan actually acquires the item itself and doesn't have to give that back, but he has to give money back, he has to give the value back. Where is that line between converting it to something else and the original thing still existing? That's the Gemara in Bava Kamma here, number 8. Amar Rav Papa, Hai man de gazel afra, someone who stole dirt, michavrei from their friend, the avdei levinta, and they made it into a brick. So now they want to do tshuva, do they give back the brick, or do they give back the money? So look at what it says. Loikani, the gazlan didn't acquire the brick, he still has to give the brick back. Why? Because it's not a permanent change, it's a reversible change. My timer. The hazan mashvelei ara, because he could easily make it back into dirt again. So since the brick could easily be ground back down again, that's a reversible change. You still have to give back the original item. However, Levinta, if you stole a brick, the Avde Afra, and then you ground it down into dust, Kani, oh, that you acquire. The gazlan acquires and he has to pay back money rather than give the original thing. My Amma, well, what are you going to say? Why do you say this? Dilma Hada Ba'avid Leilavinta. Couldn't he make the dirt back into a brick? Again, what's the case? He stole a brick. He ground it down into dirt. We say, no, that's an irreversible change. That you have to give money back. Why? You could make the dirt back into another brick and give him the brick back. No, says the Gemara. Hai Levinta Achritihu. That would be a completely different brick. Upanim Chadashas Ba'ulakam. This is the expression. Panim chadashas ba'olakam. This brick, the new brick, is a panim chadashas. Yes, it comes from the same material physically as the old brick, but it's a completely new thing. To take a brick and grind it down into dirt and then to remake it into a new brick, the new brick is a completely different halakhic item. You have to pay back money. So too, when it comes to kashrus, this becomes an issue. At what point do you take an original thing which was trace, let's say, and grind it down and work on it and soak it and put it in acid, etc., turn it into something else, and then make it back into food of a different kind? At what point do you say panim chadashas? And this is the big argument and discussion about gelatin. Gelatin is made from collagens which are taken from the bones and the skins of cows, of pigs, of trefa animals, trefa gelatin. Now, you can buy kosher gelatin, which usually these days comes from fish, which is much less of a concern, but it could be taken from a kosher cow as well. But the vast majority of gelatin which is out there is taken from trefa animals. When this shaila came up in the 20th century, so there were poskim that said, panim chadashas ba'olakam. What they do, how do you make gelatin? You soak it first in hydrochloric acid. Then you soak it in lime for a month. Then you soak it in sulfuric acid. Ribbono shel olam, what's left by the time you soak something in hydrochloric acid, lime, and sulfuric acid? Whatever is left, there's very little resemblance to what you started with. And therefore came along Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski and others, Rav Avadya Yosef as well, and said, look, whatever you started with was completely treif, was glatt treif. But what you've ended with is glatt kosher. Maybe not glatt kosher, but it's kosher enough. And therefore it's a panim chadashos ba'ol lukam, and therefore those poskim said that gelatin was kosher, for, even from a treif animal. And there are many poskim that want to apply this to synthetic meat. Okay, I got the original cell from a treif animal. But look what's happened to that cell. That microscopic cell has now turned into something which is completely unrelated in so many ways to what came before. It's grown now into millions of cells of burgers, etc. How is it in any way connected with the original thing? And therefore they want to say that answer. Look at number 9, which is Rav Shlomo Aviner. Rav Shlomo Aviner is quite keen on basically this issue. It's quite stark on this issue. And he says, look at number 9. This meat, quotes from quotes, this is from a tshuva that he has online, undergoes many changes to the point that its entire identity is different. This is the same as gelatin from non-kosher animals. The bones undergo so many changes that the product is considered an entirely new creation. While some authorities are strict about this, the basic halacha is that gelatin is kosher. On that basis, Rav Aviner says, these burgers are also kosher, even if they came from a treif animal. Even if you took the stem cell from a completely treif animal, if you grow it into a burger, it's kosher. It goes without saying that it's parav as well, but it's definitely kosher. Well, actually, it doesn't go without saying. We'll see in a minute, there might be a question as to parav or not parav. But it's definitely kosher. Now, he says that the basic halacha is that the gelatin is kosher. Does everyone say that gelatin is kosher? No. Far from it. The vast majority of kashrus organizations around the world will not give a hechsher to gelatin. No kashrus authority in America will give a hechsher, as far as I'm aware. Certainly not the OU, Sarkei, CRC, to treifa gelatin, from treifa animals. No Mahadrin hechsher in Israel will give a hechsher to gelatin from a non-kosher animal, although the Rabbanut, the non-Mahadrin Rabbanut, does rely on the fact of Rav Avadya Yosef, of Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, and you may get gelatin products in Rabbanut Hechshed items, often it's sort of jelly, gloopy things like yogurt and desserts and things like that, which could theoretically come from gelatin from a treifa animal, which you would never get in Chutz La'aretz. That's one of the issues that comes up in kashrus in Israel, and therefore many, many poskim rejected that completely. Rav Moshe Feinstein rejected, Rav Aaron Kotler, Rav Yosef Henkin, they all said absolutely not, this will not work. Gelatin has to come from a kosher source, otherwise it's also achshavei, meaning even if it's not technically edible, you're eating it, which makes it ki'ilu, you're making it edible by eating it. And therefore they want to turn around and say that with these meat burgers, you cannot use this principle of panim chadashos. If it comes from a treifa animal, then it probably won't be kosher on that basis. Now what's interesting is, there is a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Aaron Kotler on gelatin. Both of them insisted you have to have gelatin from a kosher animal. They traced the gelatin from a treifa animal. But there was a machloket between them. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, yes, it has to come from a kosher animal, but ultimately, sof, it's parav. The gelatin is parav. And Rav Aaron Kotler said, no, the gelatin is still meaty. The gelatin is flesh. It comes from a kosher animal. So again, you could apply that to our scenario and say, well, even if you go machmir and say you have to get your cell from a kosher animal, shefted animal, there may still be a debate within the gelatin framework as to whether the meat burger is parav. Maybe Rav Moshe Feinstein would have said it was parav. Rav Moshe Feinstein never heard of this technology, so he didn't talk about it. And maybe Rav Aaron Kotler would have said that it is meaty. But both of them would have insisted you take it from a kosher animal. And therefore, that's the first issue. Do we say panim chadasha? Some, like Rav Aviner, say yes, it's fine, take it from wherever you like, and some say no. That's the first issue. The second issue here in E is Nirul A9. What does Nirul A9 mean? Another principle in kashrus, and in other things. Halachically, if you can't see it with a naked eye, then it's not relevant. Why is this so? Well, it has to be that way. Halacha has to be able to work not only in 21st century America, in Silicon Valley, but also in 2nd century Yemen. You can't turn around and say, well, you need to put this under a microscope and check it properly. What if you don't have a microscope? Halacha has to work. You don't say, if milk falls into your chicken soup, no problem, send it to the lab, put it in a centrifuge, and like, let's have a look and see, No, it has to be something you can tell with a naked eye, with a normal, in normal life. And therefore, as you well know, if there are spots on your etrog, which you can only see through a lens, but with a naked eye they're not visible, the spots are not halakhically relevant. Ah, someone can see a black spot through a magnifying glass, shkayach, it doesn't affect the etrog. If there are spots in Hilchas Nida on a bedikah cloth, very tiny little spots that can only be seen through a magnifying glass, but you can't see them with the naked eye, then they're not relevant. If there are letters in a Sefer Torah which are touching, that it puzzles up the Sefer Torah if the letters are touching, but if you could only notice they're touching when you look through a lens, but when you look at it regularly, it looks as though they're not touching, that's good enough. If there are bugs on vegetables that you can only see through a microscope, then that's not relevant. If there are fish who have scales, but you can only see the scales through a magnifying glass, they're so small, that's not good enough. You need to be able to see the scales with the naked eye. This is a principle that goes across the whole of Halacha. By the way, you should just know, if you can see it with the naked eye, if you can see a spot on the etrog, if you can see a bug on the lettuce, you just don't know whether it's a brown spot or a black spot, or a bug or a piece of dirt, and you need a magnifying glass to check, then that is halakhically relevant, because you can see it, you just don't know what you're looking at. Is it a piece of dirt on your lettuce, or is it a little guy waving up at the magnifying glass? You definitely have to check. So where you see people in the shuk with their magnifying glass looking at their etrogim, hopefully what they're doing is they're checking a spot that they can see to see if it's brown or if it's black. If they're looking for spots that you can't see, then they don't know really what they're doing. Fine. Are we going to say that here? What is this cell that we take from the original cow? It's microscopic. You cannot see it. Is it halakhically, therefore, irrelevant? And as far as we're concerned, whatever we've produced has got nothing to do with the original cell. Some people want to say that. However, there is a piece from Rav Shlomo Zalman that sounds like that's not possible. Look at number 10. Rav Shlomo Zalman is talking about grafting plants. Now, grafting plants is a problem. It's kilayim, actual kilayim. What if you graft plants on a microscopic level in a lab? You take different cells and you push them together and do different things. Look at what he says in number 10. Be'in she'elato, b'davar handasat genetik. Genetic engineering. She'machnisim chelkikei ta'im. They put particles of cells mibriya achat from one species l'shniya into a second one ubezeh mishanim et tochnitah shel l'shniya, and then they change the qualities, the attributes of the second one. Is that a problem? Is that not a problem? It's microscopic. It's all happening under a microscope. Da'al yedezeh lahatir isu kilayim. Can you allow kilayim here? Mikaven she'el chel takim elu nirem la'ayin ha'adam, because they're all invisible. Maybe these are all irrelevant. Look at what he says. No. Kevan she'anashim metaplim b'chalkikim ha'el. Since people use these, they work with these microscopic particles, umavirim otam mimin echad l'sheni, and they're moving around from one to the other. So harizichoshim mamash k'nirel einayim. That's called nirel einayim. This is the normal way that you work with these kind of particles under a microscope. That is a big chiddush. He says that's called nirel einayim. The light down eclalis align. It's got nothing to do with bugs. She'enam neil, you can't see. Meaning, how do people as a whole relate to bugs? They relate to them with the naked eye. And therefore, if you can only see them through a magnifying glass or a microscope, so it's not relevant because that's not called bugs. But how do people relate to microscopic particles? They relate to them under a microscope. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, if that's the way you relate to it, that's called nirel einayim. Very interesting. And he's machmir on this. But a number of poskim have therefore said, you can't get away from your synthetic meat issue by just saying it's not nirel einayim, because it could be that since this is how we deal with it, that's called nirel einayim. So that point also may be problematic. Go over to page 4. The gentleman over there asked Eva Minachai. What is Eva Minachai? So the classic Eva Minachai, why did the Torah prohibit Eva Minachai now? Why did the Torah prohibit any historian? They're all gezeiros from Hashem, but there are reasons as well. In the ancient world, Eva Minachai was a very common thing. Meaning, if you had a cow outside, and you only needed a small amount of meat to feed a family for a short amount of time, why would you kill the cow? Meaning you kill the cow, the meat's all going to go off. You might not be able to sell it. You'll lose your whole cow. So what did people used to do? They used to cut off bits of the live animal. Bit by bit, limb by limb, leg by leg, arm by arm. Okay, it's horribly cruel to the cow. Well, machpatlehem, they didn't care. I'm not talking about the Jewish community. I'm talking about the regular world. And that way they'd be able to get fresh meat from the animal and keep the animal alive long enough so that eventually they'd need to shech it. They'd need to kill it, otherwise it would just fall over. But that was what people used to do. The Torah says that's not what, we can't do that. And truth is, non-Jews can't do that either. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach in that category as well. Look at number 11. Quote from the Torah. The Torah says, "The loy toichal nefesh im basar." If you eat the basar, says the Torah, you're not allowed to eat it while it's still got the nefesh in it. You have to kill it first, not eat it with the nefesh. Azhara, this is a prohibition. Lo ochel ed min achai, not to eat ed min achai. And you asked about the shear before, so we'll see now. B'noig b'behem of achai v'av, this applies to animals and it applies to wild animals, domesticated animals, birds. Ve'ein anoig ela b'torim, but only to kosher animals. I'm not getting into that now. The fikach eva aporesh min achai. Therefore, if you get an eva, a limb off the animal, bein shiyesh bo basar v'gidim v'atzamot, I don't care in halacha, it says whether it's got bones and meat and sinews. Or bein she'ein bo ela basar, some limbs only have flesh. Kagon halashon, the tongue, hatachul, the spleen, hakleyot, the kidneys, habesin, the testicles. If you take those from an animal, even though they have no bones in them, they're still eva min achai. Asur lo'achlam, you're not allowed to eat them. Bein in yesh kazayis, whether they're bigger or smaller than a kazayis. V'chein basara, and even if you just take flesh off it, so you're not taking a whole limb, like a tongue or a spleen. You're just taking a cut of flesh from the animal. Basara poresh min achai, meat which is taken out from an animal, which is alive. Asur. Afal pisha ein bo mamash, eva. Even though it's not eva min achai, asur. It's still asur mishum what? Mishum abasar basada treifa lo tocheyu. It's another mitzvah in the Torah. You're not allowed to eat flesh torn from the field. That way you have to kill the animal first. And therefore, there are many people who want to say, look, this is eva min achai. If you take a cell out of an animal, I don't care if it's less than a kazayis. It's still meat. It's just a very small amount of meat. That's called eva min achai. And if that's eva min achai, then maybe the whole thing will be eva min achai. It's one big eva min achai burger. Okay? And therefore, that will be offered to eat on that basis. Other people want to say, oh, come on, leave me alone. Less than a kazayis, I understand, maybe there's still an isser of eva min achai. But a cell? A cell? What's a cell? A cell is garnished. And they even want to bring a raya for this that we saw a few weeks ago, looking at number 12. An embryo, a human embryo. Amar Rav Chisda says, ad arbayim, until 40 days gestation, maya ba'almehi. It's not really alive. It's just fluid. That's called fluid. That's not called basar. That's called fluid. So by the same time, what's inside an embryo at 40 days, 39 days gestation? It's full of cells, including stem cells. So if that's good enough for an embryo, if an embryo is not considered anything but fluid, maybe a cell taken from a cow is also not considered anything but fluid, and therefore eidim and achai goes away. That's one possibility. Chicken soup is fluid, but it's taken from a dead chicken, not a live chicken. I don't know how your family makes chicken soup, but my family, my grandmother always made chicken soup from using dead chickens. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Other people want to say, that no, Maya Ba'alma, this issue of mere fluid, that's a specific halacha about human embryos. Why are you taking that halacha, which is clearly talking about the gestation of a human embryo, and bringing it to an issue of Eid Min Achai? You know, ma'inyan shmita etzel asina. You know, what's one got to do with the other? And therefore they say that's not good enough, and maybe you're having an Eid Min Achai burger, and that would obviously be trait. Now, two more principles we have to work into before we look at the final analysis here. What's the issue with things coming out of traitor animals? Now, we'll look at this when we look at honey next week as well. But there is a concept of a yotsemina tame. Anything that comes out of a traitor animal is by definition traitor. Look at number 13. The Mishnah in Bechorot says, Behema tahora, you have a kosher animal. Sheyalda kamin behema tamea. And it has a baby, and the baby looks like a traitor animal. Very obviously something's gone wrong somewhere, but you have an animal with shoes that cud, with split hooves, nice and kosher, and it gives birth to something that looks like a little traitor animal, without split hooves, that doesn't chew the cud, it's what it is. And he said, it's okay, it's fine, mutzabachila, that's fine. Don't worry that your little fetus doesn't look like a kosher animal, it comes from a kosher animal, it's fine. Utameya, but if a treifa animal, yalda min behema tyra, gives birth to something that looks fine, it looks like a kosher animal, asur bachila, you're not allowed to eat that. Why? And here's the magic rule. Shehayotze mitame tame, vahayotze min atahor, tahor. Anything that comes out of a treifa animal is treifa. And we know this. The milk of a camel, the secretions of a treifa animal, they're all treifa. And anything that comes out of a kosher animal is kosher. I mentioned before in one of the shirim, there's a shaila these days as to whether any milk on the market at all is kosher at all. I'm not talking about Chalav Yisrael. Because there are a certain number of cows out there which are treifas. There always have been. Treifas meaning they're not well, they're ill, whatever. If I kill the cow and check the lungs, then I can tell which was the treifa and I can throw out the meat that's no good or sell it to a non-Jew and eat the meat that is good. But how do I know when I milk the cow whether it's a treifa? You can't ask it. Won't tell you. How are you feeling this morning, Betsy? Okay? Well, I've got a hole here and I've got a hole. He won't tell you. And therefore, how can I drink milk at all? Maybe I should think that maybe the milk that comes from this, maybe it's a treifa cow. And I just don't know yet. So the Gemara asks that question and it answers, don't worry, the vast majority of cows are not treifas, and therefore you can be sodech al rov. Rov is a principle, doraisa in halacha. We rely on the majority. So since this cow is very unlikely to be a treifa, so you can drink the milk. Came along Rav Shechter some years ago and said, well, that's not true anymore. There are so many procedures done on animals. Injections which puncture organs in different places, in different ways, it may well be, says Rav Shechter, that unless you know that your cow is coming from an organic farm or whatever, then actually the majority of cows these days are treifas, in which case you don't have your rov, and maybe you can't eat the milk, drink the milk at all. Because kol ha-yotzim min ha-tame, tame. If it's coming from a treifa animal, it's treifa. Not getting into Rav Shechter. Now, the vast majority of people are not concerned by that argument, or they're concerned, but they answer it a different way. But here it seems pretty clear that what's coming out, if it's coming from a treifa animal, it will be treifa. We're going to have to talk about this next week with honey, because honey comes from where? Or does it? That's the question. Does honey come from the bees or does not come from the bees? Either way, everybody knows that honey is kosher. The question is why? It's a big debate. Don't think it's so straightforward. We'll talk about that, please God, next week before you get to your apple and honey. Fine. So it has to come from a kosher animal, otherwise it's treif. Now, does that mean it's also basari? Not necessarily. Have a look at this Rambam. The Rambam talks about, he obviously agrees with this principle of anything that comes from a treifa animal is treifa, anything from a kosher animal is kosher, so you would have to get your stem cell in that sense from a kosher animal. But he says as follows, things which are yotze, they're not the real deal, but they're things that come out of it. Hamavashel shilyan, if you take the embryonic sac of a cow, I don't know if that would be particularly tasty, but you take that. Or the skin of the cow. The gidim, or hard sinews of the cow. The atzamot, or the bones of the cow. The ikrei karnaim, or the roots of the horns of the bull of the cow. Utsalafim, or the feet of the cow. Harachim, if they're soft enough to eat. The chalav, and you cook any of those things in milk. So, is that allowed? Is that meat and milk, or is that not meat and milk? Patur. It's not. It's the patur means you didn't transgress the Torah provision of meat and milk. And even if you eat them, you're patur. Now, I'm not saying it's allowed. It may be patur aval asur. It may be prohibited on a rabbinic level. But it's not. Why? Why are these things not fleshic? The skin of the cow, and the hooves of the cow, and the roots of the horns of the cow. Why is that not fleshic? If they weren't edible, they wouldn't be food. He's taking things that are edible. These are soft bones and soft hooves, and that's no good without saying. If you try and chew on the hoof of a cow, it's not food at all. You could chew on the hoof of a horse. That's not bichlal, not food. It's not food, it's not edible. These are edible, but they're not fleshic. So you see, not everything that comes from an animal is exactly like that animal. So again, this comes into the question, as if I'm going to take this meat from a kosher animal, okay, I'm not going to take a stem cell from a treifa animal, only from a kosher animal. But maybe it is parataka, maybe it's not fleshic. Yes? Okay, basaram, so what is the line between basar and not basar? And then we get into our favorite topic of bittul that we talked about last week. Yes, sir? The placenta, that's right. It's there's a debate as to whether the cilia is the placenta or it's the sac that goes around the embryo that the embryo is carrying, etc. But it's interesting, the placenta, that field sounds quite meaty to me, but no, apparently it's a yolk, it's not really the animal. Other people say no, the stem cell is not just a yolk, that's part of the meat. It's mamish part of the meat, and therefore you can't get away with saying it won't be actually meaty. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a very interesting definition of the line. What is the line between those little yellow eggs that I used to love? My grandmother used to put them in chicken soup. And if someone can tell me where you can still get them, then that'll be worth a large amount to me. But I used to eat those in my grandmother's chicken soup, all made from dead chickens. What is the line between those eggs which are flacic, which are mamish part of the chicken, and once it forms a shell, then that's not flacic anymore. It now becomes part of. This is part of that definition as to what is the line between a yotze and part of the meat in and of itself. Obviously, an egg is a yotze. An egg from a trait bird is trait. If you want to go and collect partridge eggs or whatever, then that's going to be trait. Now, ostrich eggs, etc. Bittle. Now, we talked about this when we looked at the whiskey last week. Can we make an argument that, okay, fine, I'll accept the original stem cell was trait. It came from an animal which wasn't shepherded, or came from a trait for animal, it's trait. But come on, that stem cell has now been subsumed within millions and millions of times of other things that were not from that original animal. Can we turn around and say that actually it's bottle? So this is a very interesting question which the Mishnah raises itself. If we start off with something trait, but then it grows into another thing, and another thing, and another thing, and another thing, and another thing, are those other things still trait like the first thing, or are they like new things? This is not a new question. Have a look at the following, number 15. This is a Mishnah in Trumot. Hatevel. What is Tevel? Tevel is produce which has not yet had trumas and maasas taken from it. So let's say you had an onion, or whatever, and you harvested it, and you didn't bother taking trumas and maasas. You just left it as tevel, which is not kosher. You can't eat tevel. It's quite a serious avera to eat tevel. And you didn't eat it, but you said, yes, let's plant it. Let's replant it. And you planted tevel, and it grew into a new plant. Is that new plant all tevel? Or no, the original thing was tevel, but this new plant is a new thing, which is a whole new beginning. You can see how this is a very old question. So look what the Mishnah says, 15. Hatevel, untithed produce. Gidulav mutarim. Stuff that grew from that is fine. It's all new. But bedavash zara kala. That's only if the original plant rotted away. You imagine a grain of wheat, which was tevel, which was not tithed, and you planted that grain of wheat, and it grew into a wheat plant. The original grain of wheat rots away. It's not there anymore. If you pull the wheat plant out, there's no wheat grain under there anymore. It's just roots. Aval badavashe eino zarakal. But in something where the original seed remains, then gidulei gidulim asurim. Not only are the growths trait, but the growths of the growths of the growths of the growths down the line, we have the great-great-grandchildren of the plant are still tevel. Ezu davashe ein zarakala. What do I mean by something where the seed doesn't rot away? Tugon haluf, hashum, batatalim. Garlic. Onions. If you plant an onion, it grows into an onion plant. And then a month later, you pull out the plant. What's underneath? An onion. The original onion you put there, it doesn't go anywhere. This is the distinction between zarakala and zaroenchala. Where the seed was originally there stays, and when it doesn't stay. So, how does that impact on our stem cell burgers? Our original stem cell, which became 2 cells, 10 cells, 1,000 cells, 1,000,000 cells, is our original cell still there? Cell still there? Somewhere in that mass of millions and billions of cells, which are your burger, is the original trace cell, and it hasn't gone anywhere. And therefore, if that's the case, then we're going to have problems. And then there's a whole shiloh of different bittle issues, which I've listed on number 5. Can we say that the cell is bottle in the nutrients? Meaning they don't just put a cell in a dish, they pour lots of other stuff in as well. If that's kosher, can we say it's bottle in that? Not necessarily, because that's all put there for the cell. Is the cell what's called, I'm not getting into these in detail, but we talked about some of these last week. Is the cell a davah ha-ma'amid? Adava Hamamid, remember the case of the cheese? Where the rennet, if rennet comes from a trefa ingredient, even though the rennet is not noticeable anymore, it's there because that's what's holding the thing together. Do we say the same thing? These cells cannot just be bottled because they are actually making the whole thing work. And do we say zever zegorim, different ingredients coming in? It's not so straightforward. Do we say bitl isla chatchila? This is all stuff we talked about last week. Meaning, even if we say it is trefa, maybe it's bottled, but maybe it's not, because it was put there purposefully. And then you have to have the same discussion like we had with the non-Jewish whiskey producers. When these people are putting these cells in there, are they doing it with the Jews in mind, without the Jews in mind? These are all issues we discussed last week. Basically, there is no clear answer that we can just say that the whole thing is bottled. Two or three other issues and we'll summarize. What about other ingredients? Well, actually, there are different opinions as to how they make this stuff. But according to some processes, actually what they do is they grow it in trefa calf blood. Now, if that's the case, then we can just take the whole shear and just pop it in the geniza, because there's nothing to talk about. If we grow the whole burger soaked in trefa blood, I'm sure it makes it taste great in terms of burgers, but if they do that, then that's not gonna help us at all. It's gonna make the whole thing trade. But they may not do that, and they don't have to do that. It's a question of how they're going to produce it. So let's assume for now that it's kosher and that it's paras. Is there still a maris ayin problem? Now, what is maris ayin? Maris ayin is much talked about. Maris ayin obviously means that the appearance of the ayin, where somebody's doing something which is technically permitted, but it looks very sketchy, it looks very strange, and people will assume that they're doing an Aveira. We learn Maris Ayin out from a Pasuk, even though Maris Ayin is a rabbinic issue, it's based on a Pasuk that you have to be not only Nikiim Ve'enei Hashem, but Nikiim Ve'edei Adam as well. We say this in benching. Yeah? What do we say? How does it go? Nikiim Ve'enei Elokim Ve'adam. Okay? We have to be clean not only in the eyes of God, but in the eyes of other people as well. So Chazal introduced Maris Ayin in many different areas. For example, they said that if you have wet clothes on Shabbat that got soaked in the rain, you can't hang them on the clothes dryer because people will think, what? You've been washing your clothes on Shabbat. And that's Maris Ayin, etc. And they give many, many different examples. Are we going to say here, this is another one, that these burgers, they look like meat, they taste like meat, people will assume you're eating meat and milk. Now, do we say that or do we not say that? What do we say about vegetarian burgers? Is there a Maris Ayin problem?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore. And that's a very good answer. Meaning when these things first come out, remember the old days where they used to say you have to put the packaging on the margarine and the almond milk and all that stuff, because people will see, they put butter in there, you know. People don't even eat butter anymore. They're scared stiff to even touch the stuff. Nowadays, if you see butter being served at a meat do, you won't even think for a minute it's butter. Now all the stuff that my son-in-law eats for his dinner on Friday night, that's tofu, etc., it may look like burgers, I can tell you it certainly doesn't taste like burgers, but there's no Maris Ayin. Everybody knows that it's not meat. So too, are we going to say that here? So maybe at first, we'll turn around and say there's a Maris Ayin problem. You'll have to put a label saying that this is super meat burgers, which are we passing like Rav Aviner, that these are parav or something. But maybe after a while it'll become okay. We nearly caused a riot when my daughter got engaged. We had a milchik meal and we had this sliced smoked turkey. Okay? And we didn't even think about it. And we had it on the table and so many people assumed that we put salami out on the table. What do they think? Like, are we going to put salami on the table? But, my machatonim, their family's coming, like, this is who you're marrying? They put out salami with a milchik meal? Okay, they got over it. On the other hand, maybe it's not a problem. And there's an interesting prichadosh, which certainly my own rebbeim have passed like this, on other issues. Look in the prichadosh number 16. Says the Prichadosh, a very important halachic sefer on the Shulchan Aruch, Imbanu lahaysif midatene. If we start to add on to Maris Ayin from our own mind, we'll be assering this, prohibiting that, prohibiting this, this is Maris Ayin, that's Maris Ayin. So he paskins So chen kasva tosus, he brings the tosus a resh perik kol basar. The aim lidmot gezerot b'chachamim. We're not allowed to compare lidmot gezerot b'chachamim the gezerot of the rabbi zo lezo ele b'mekomot shehashat medameh alka. Meaning only where the Gemara says maras ayin is maras ayin. You can't turn around and say, well, if Chazal would have been alive today, they would have for sure asked this. How do you know? You don't know. The Pre-Chadosh comes along and says, there are X number of Maras Ayins in the Talmud. So, finish. Nothing else is Maras Ayin. Are you allowed to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken to use the bathroom? This happened to me actually once on Shabbos afternoon. I was in Los Angeles, walking from one side of Los Angeles, from Hancock Park to Pico Robertson, which is a good 2.5 hour walk on a Shabbat afternoon. And of course, in the middle, I need to use the bathroom. And I went into a Chinese laundry. They were not interested. We don't have a bathroom. Yeah, right, you don't have a bathroom. Of course you have a bathroom. You just won't let me use it. Fine. So the only place I could go was Kentucky Fried Chicken. So are you allowed to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken to see? I mean, what choice do you have in these circumstances? So I went in, and of course, as I walked out, there's an entire group of Beit Yaakov girls walking past. Shabbos. Yeah. Have you tried the special Shabbos afternoon Shalosh Shudas deal? So he says, no, there's no more marriage. You can't make up marriage signs. I had a shiloh once from a student who has grandparents who do not keep kosher, and they insist that she goes out with them every Sunday. That's to still convince themselves that their Baal Tshuva granddaughter is still normal. She has to go out with them every Sunday to a trade restaurant. She doesn't have to eat anything, or she can have a little bit of, tomatoes or whatever it is, but she has to go with them because that's their family ritual. She says to me, is it Marathayan every Sunday to go to a trade restaurant? And I asked the Shaila to quote. He says, no. Quote is Pre-Chadash and says, there's no Marathayan. You can't make up new Marathayan. So maybe, and not everyone agrees with that, but maybe you will end up with this as well and say that these super burgers, whatever they're called, are not going to be Marathayan either. So, bottom line. We've gone through a lot of different questions. We've talked about Bittl and we've talked about Nir El Einayim, whether it's too small, whether it's a Yotzim and a Tame. We've talked about all of that. What do the poskim say? So you seem to have two approaches on this. Many of the poskim have not yet weighed in on this, but some of them have. Rav Aviner, I mentioned before, there's a wonderful video featuring Rav Aviner, Rav Dov Lior, who, as you know, is the chief rabbi of Kiryat Arba, and Rav Yuval Shurlo, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva there in Ranana. So these are serious people in the community, and they all take a very lenient view on this issue. Then you look at the bottom of the video, and you see the video was made by Supermeat, the actual producers of the thing. So I don't think for 1 minute that that's not what these poskim think. I'm sure that is what they think. But at the end of the day, you have to know who's making the videos. Look at what Rav Aviner says. In sum, number 17, it seems that a lab-grown burger is not treif, meaning it doesn't matter where you get it from. It is not considered a limb taken from a living animal, and it's parav. Well, even though it's not vegetarian, meaning if you want to be a vegetarian for ethical reasons, don't think that this is a vegetarian food. Based on three reasons. A, it is not created in a regular process like the creation of meat. It's not real meat. It's not created in a standard way. B, it has undergone so many changes to the point that its entire identity is different, like we saw with gelatin, according to those who allow it. C, the stem cells from which it's been taken cannot be seen by the human eye. However, since this is a new creation, the great Torah scholars must decide on the matter. So he hedges at the end and he says, don't quote me, or at least don't rely on me. And regarding eating such a burger with dairy, there's no problem with Maris Ayin, since we do not add to the list of things forbidden in the Gemara on account of Maris Ayin. Very clear, he says, although I'm not taking Achrayas, you have to ask the senior poskim, then I think it's parav, and I think it's kosher, and you can eat it with meat, with cheese. Number 18, I'm quoting here from the Times of Israel. I don't like quoting from the media, because they always give you a little bit of the story, but they quote Rav Menachem Gnat, from the Orthodox Union. Now, I haven't spoken to Rabbi Gnat, and I don't know what he holds in terms of Psech Lemaisa, but he is quoted as follows. For kosher observant Jews, the cultured burgers could open the door to radical dietary changes. namely the birth of a kosher cheeseburger, in case you think that's what the world has been waiting for. The birth of a kosher cheeseburger. That's because the meat produced through the process could be considered parav, neither meat nor dairy, according to Rabbi Nachum Ganach, CEO of the Orthodox Union's kosher division. Thus, under traditional Jewish law, the burger could be paired with dairy products. However, other poskim say very differently. Let me just quote you number 19. This is an article here from Machon HaTorah V'Haaretz, which is a very important organization, and they quote as follows. Number 19. This artificial hamburger, yikavel pi harechev hataim shenoldu betalis. You'll have to look at how it was grown. Klomar, meaning, im hata, if the cell hamakori, the original cell, nilkach mi bal chaim lo kasher, it was taken from a trefa animal, or shelonish hatkedin, or a non-shepherded animal, harichitse etzae ta zeh. All the later generations and products of this cell, nechshavim asurim gamke. It will all be traced. Umikan, so too, shegama hamburger malakoti the mikreze, eino nechshav kasher, it won't be kosher, af hu al pi klali al satayudi. Meaning, he says, basically, you have to go with the original cell. He disagrees totally. If the cell is from a trefa animal, it's trefa. If it's from a kosher animal, it's meaty. So, in a few years, when super meat get their stuff on the market and it appears in Rami Levi, someone's going to have to pass in this shayla properly for everybody who's going to buy it. And you never know, your children may be growing up, and grandchildren, great-grandchildren on diets of super meat burgers. Let's see if they're eating them with cheese or not. Watch this space and we'll work that out. Next week, please God, we will go further in the Yatash. The what? She's asking, are the calories the same? That I don't know.
Contemporary posting.